Today we come to the 8th chapter. With the 7 previous chapters, the author of the manual explained to us the 4 ultimate realities and their categories. So now we know the 4 ultimate truths, the 4 ultimate realities, and then the categories are different names of those 4 ultimate realities, and also how they are related to each other. Now in this 8th chapter, the author explained to us the law of cause and effect, or the law of conditionality. And with regard to the law of conditionality, we need to understand 3 things. The first one is called Paccaya in Pali. And the second one is Pacciyuppanna. And the third one is Paccaya Sati. The first one, Paccaya. You have met this word many times. Say Hetu Paccayo, Aramana Paccayo, and so on. So Paccaya means cause or condition. Normally, Paccaya would mean condition. But here, Paccaya is understood to have the meaning of both cause and condition. And cause or condition here means both producing cause and supporting cause. So there are 2 kinds of causations or 2 kinds of conditioning. One is producing the effect, and the other is supporting the effect, which has been produced by other karma. So the supporting or maintaining power of a certain reality is called the Paccaya. Actually, here Paccaya means those that have this power of causation, this power of maintaining. So they are, in the manual, they are described by the words of the conditioned states. The next one is Paccayuppanna. That means those that arise dependent upon conditions or causes. So in brief, the effect or fruits. They are the ones that arise depending upon some other condition, or they may be produced by some cause. Now, the Paccaya comprises all chetas, chetasikas, and material phenomena or material qualities except the last 4 of the 28. And Pacciyuppanna, or those that are conditioned, all conditioned phenomena. Oh, I'm talking the other way around. The conditioned states, Pacciyuppanna, comprises all chetas, chetasikas, and material properties, except the last 4. And the Paccaya comprises all conditioned phenomena, that means cetas, cetasikas, rupas, as well as nibbana and concepts or panyati. So everything is included in paccaya. But in the paccayupanas, only cetas, cetasikas, and some material properties are included. And paccaya, I mean, paccaya sati, or the force that operate between the conditioning states and the conditioned states, is called paccaya sati. Now, sati means a force or power. In fact, it is understood to be the way of relationship. How cause and effect are related. Now, when we say this is a cause, this is a fact, we also have to understand how the cause and effect are related, in what way they are related. And there are 24 such relations taught in the book of Patthana in Abhidhamma. So with regard to the causation, we need to understand these three things. Paccaya, cause or condition. Paccayupanna, effect, or those that are conditioned, or that are caused, that are supported. And also, paccaya sati, the force of conditioning, or the power of conditioning, or the way and the conditioning and conditioned are related. In this chapter, two important teachings are given. The first one is, as you know, paticca samuppada. It is translated as dependent origination, or dependent arising, or sometimes dependent co-arising, or maybe there are some other names. And the second is paṭṭhāna, or causal relations. Although both these teachings teach the conditionality, the way they teach is different. Paticca samuppada is the method of dependent arising marked by the simple happening of a state in dependence on some other state. This is what is translated there. So this means paticca samuppada states just the conditioning factor and conditioned factors. That means paticca samuppada will teach us B arises dependent upon A, and C arises dependent upon B, D arises dependent upon C, and so on. So paticca samuppada tells us just A conditions B, B conditions C, C conditions D, and so on. But it does not tell us how, in what way these two are conditioned, in what way A and B are related, and in what way B and C, C and D, D and E are related. In the paṭṭhāna, the cause and effect, as well as the paccaya sati, or the force of causal relation, is stated. So in paṭṭhāna, you may find the saying, A is related to B as a root cause, root condition, or as object condition, or as predominant condition, and so on. So paticca samuppada is like saying A and B are related. But paṭṭhāna is like saying A and B are related as father and son, or as brothers. So paṭṭhāna is more comprehensive in treating the causal relations between different phenomena. And the teachers of old explain these two by mixing both methods. Now, in Visuddhimagga, and also in the commentary to Abhidhamma, especially a commentary on Vibhanga, Paticchasamuppada is explained with reference to Patthana conditions as well. But here in this manual, they are treated separately. It is because it is very difficult for beginners to study Paticchasamuppada with reference to Patthana, because you have to be familiar with Patthana first so that you can really understand how Avijja and Sankhara are related and Sankhara and Vijnana are related. So in this book, in this manual, these are treated separately. So in the treatment of Paticchasamuppada, you will not find any mention of Patthana. So now, what is Paticchasamuppada? Now, it is a kind of law of cause and effect. And Paticchasamuppada is for living beings only. Now, you must make this note. Paticchasamuppada does not explain the relationship between one matter and another outside living beings. So it will not explain why the world begins or whatever. It explains only the relationship of different factors belonging to animate beings. So it is a causal structure of the round of existence, the same thing. And this teaching of Paticchasamuppada is not the creation of the Buddha. The Buddha did not create the law of cause and effect or the structure of causal relations. This law is always in the world since the world came into being. The world means the world of living beings. So Buddha did not create, or Buddha did not give command, say, to Avijja to produce Sankhara and so on. But it is actually a natural law. Since it is a natural law, it is always with the beings, and so Buddha was not the creator of this law. He was the discoverer of this law. And it is openly stated in many places. So whether the Buddhas arise or not arise, there is this element, this relatedness of states, or this regularity of states, this specific conditionality. And then Buddha comes and discovers it, penetrates into it. And having discovered it, having penetrated into it, he announces it, he teaches it, he makes it known, he establishes, he exposes, he expounds, and he explains it. And he says, observe it. So that is what our book said. So whether the Buddhas arise or not, there is this law of conditionality. Only beings did not know about it because it is hidden. And then Buddha came and Buddha discovered it and then showed it to the world. So it is like the law of gravity. The law of gravity is not created by Sir Isaac Newton. It comes along with the beginning of the arising of the world. But nobody knew that there was such a thing as a law of gravity until Newton discovered it and then revealed it to the world. So, in the same way, the Paticca-samubbada, the law of causation, is not created by the Buddha. Buddha was just the discoverer of it. And this teaching or this doctrine of Paticca-samubbada has something to do with Bodhisattva. Now, as I think you remember how Bodhisattva, while sitting under the Bodhi tree and trying to become the Buddha, he practiced vipassana on the 12 factors of Paticca-samubbada, on avijja, sankhara, and so on. Now, you all know that on the full moon day of May, Buddha approached the Bodhi tree and sat under it and then practiced breathing meditation. And he gained 4 jhanas successively, and then the other 4 arupa vajra jhanas, and then he attained the supernormal knowledge by which he could remember all his past lives that he gained during the first watch of the night. And during the second or middle watch of the night, he gained another supernormal knowledge by which he saw beings dying from one existence and being reborn in another. During the last watch of the night, he entered into the 4th rupa vajra jhana and then emerged from it and practiced vipassana on these 12 factors of Paticca-samubbada. So he practiced vipassana on avijja, seeing avijja as impermanent, as suffering, and as insubstantial, anicca, dukkha, and anatta. So he practiced vipassana on all these 12 factors many, many times. In fact, according to what the book said, he practiced 1,000 billion times. That means practicing anicca, dukkha, anatta on each factor many, many, many times. So that was his vipassana. That is why it is called Mahavipassana, Bodhisattva's Mahavipassana. And after, contemplating on or practicing vipassana at the stage of the knowledge of comprehension, he again entered into the 4th jhana. And then emerging from that 4th jhana again, he practiced vipassana again and reached the knowledge of seeing, rising and falling and so on, and he goes up one step after another, and ultimately he gained enlightenment. Now, why did he enter into the 4th jhana before practicing vipassana on Paticca-samubbada, and also after after practicing vipassana on Paticca-samubbada? It is said that it is like sharpening the sword. So if when your sword have cut many tough objects, it becomes blunt, and so you have to sharpen it to use it again. So in the same way, Bodhisattva wanted to sharpen his wisdom. So he entered into the 4th jhana and then emerged from it and practiced vipassana. So Paticca-samubbada was known to the Buddha even before his enlightenment. This we must understand. Not after his enlightenment. Even before his enlightenment, he knew Paticca-samubbada thoroughly And that is why he practiced vipassana billions of times on the 12 factors of Vatijasamubhata. And that practicing of Vatijasamubhata helps him to attain the higher stages of vipassana and ultimately the gaining of enlightenment as a supreme Buddha. And after his enlightenment also, he contemplated on the Paticca-samubbada. Now, after his enlightenment, what did he do? Immediately after his enlightenment, he sat under the Bodhi tree for 7 days. So on the first night, during the first watch of the first night, he contemplated on Paticca-samubbada in due order and in the reverse order. Now, in due order means in the order of arising, because there is avijja as condition, sankharas arise, because there are sankharas as condition, vijnana arise, and so on. And the reverse order means not going backward. Reverse order means because of the cessation of avijja, sankharas cease. Because of the cessation of sankharas, vijnana ceases, and so on. So this is the order of cessation. So both in the order of arising and in order of cessation, Buddha contemplated on Paticca-samubbada during the first watch of the night, and then he uttered a solemn utterance, and then during the second watch also he practiced in the same way, and he made another utterance, and during the third watch of the night also he practiced the same way and made the made another a joyful utterance. And then on the seventh night, again, he contemplated on Paticca-samubbada in the order of arising for the first watch. And during the second watch, he contemplated on Paticca-samubbada in the order of cessation. And during the third watch of the night, he contemplated on both the order of arising and order of cessation. And then after that, on many occasions, he taught Paticca-samubbada many, many times during his 45 years of ministry. And we find the teaching of Paticca-samubbada both in the Sotanta and Abhidhamma. But Patthana you find only in Abhidhamma. And Buddha was so thoroughly acquainted with the structure of Paticca-samubbada that he taught in different ways. Now, when you are really familiar with something, a subject, you can pick up that subject at any point and then you can explain it. So in the same way, Buddha taught Paticca-samubbada not in the order from beginning to the end. Sometimes he went through this from the beginning to the end in sequence. Sometimes he may pick up something in the middle and went to the end. Like he may pick up vedana and then say vedana conditions, tanha, tanha conditions, upadana, and so on. Sometimes he may pick up the last, jaramarana, old age and death, and then went backward to the beginning. Sometimes he may pick up something in the middle, say tanha, and then went backward to avijja. So in different ways, Buddha taught Paticca-samubbada. And this Paticca-samubbada, the teaching of Paticca-samubbada, or this structure of conditionality, is said to be very deep. It is profound. Buddha himself said that it was profound. Now, once the Venerable Ananda said, Bhante, it's wonderful, but Dishasamubhada is profound, and it appears as profound. But to me, it looks like shallow. Ananda said like that. So when Ananda said like that, Buddha said, Ananda, don't say in that in this way. do not say like this. Profound is this Paticca-samubbada, and profound it appears. So it looks like profound, and it is profound. It's deep. It is difficult to get into, difficult to understand. Both as a study and as intuitive understanding. Even as a study, it's not easy. We can just scratch the surface and leave it. Or we can go deep into it in depth. If you want to study in depth, it becomes very deep and difficult. So, it is deep or profound. And to understand intuitively, to understand, to really understand from experience, is more difficult. So, Paticca-samubbada is not easy to understand. And Buddha said, it is profound and it looks profound, and it is because of not understanding this Dhamma that beings cannot transcend this samsara. Beings go round and round in samsara because they do not understand the Paticca-samubbada. Now, somebody may think that it is essential to understand Paticca-samubbada to gain enlightenment. And in Visuddhimagga also, the chapter of Paticca-samubbada is given as a beginning of the practice of vipassana, or in the section of panya. So it may lead to the understanding that we need to understand Paticca-samubbada before we can practice vipassana meditation. Now, if you understand Paticca-samubbada and if you understand Abhidhamma before you practice vipassana meditation, it is good. So it can help you clarify many of your experiences without having recourse to a teacher. But sometimes it may be a hindrance. Because you know much about Abhidhamma and Paticca-samubbada, and you may want to analyze some experience you have met with, and so it will take you longer to get a real good concentration. So it can be a hindrance as well as a help. And there is one passage, one sentence, in a sutta called Mahahatthibhodhopama Sutta. And we must understand that statement correctly according to the commentaries. There, the Mahahatthibhodhopama Sutta was expounded by the Venerable Sariputta. It was not expounded by the Buddha. In that sutta, there is one sentence. He who sees Paticca-samubbada sees the Dhamma. He who sees the Dhamma sees Paticca-samubbada. And that passage is interpreted as meaning by many people as meaning, if you know Paticca-samubbada, you know the Dhamma, and if you know the Dhamma, you know Paticca-samubbada. But here in this sutta, The Venerable Sariputta was not talking about Paticchasamubbada at all. He was talking about the four primary elements, and also he was talking about how the seeing consciousness and so on arise, depending on the eye and the object and the attention. And then he said, the Buddha has said, he who sees Paticchasamubbada sees the Dhamma, and he who sees the Dhamma sees Paticchasamubbada. So, how are we to translate that sentence? Or how are we to understand that sentence? The commentary says that in this sentence, Paticchasamubbada means conditions, not the doctrine of dependent origination. Paticchasamubbada means conditions. And Dhamma means conditioned states. So this sentence simply means he who sees the conditions sees the also sees those that are conditioned, and he who sees those that are conditions also sees the conditions. Or to be brief, he who sees the cause also sees the effect, and he who sees the effect also sees the cause. So that is the meaning to understand. So we should not point out to that sentence and say that, oh, you must understand Paticchasamubbada so that you understand the Dhamma. So here, Dhamma does not mean the doctrine as a whole, but here the word Dhamma means the effect or conditioned states. And the word Paticchasamubbada in this particular place means the conditions. So the Paticchasamubbada, or the teaching of dependent arising or dependent origination, is one of the two teachings that deal with causality of things. Now we will go to the formula of Paticchasamubbada. So you may look at the sheet. Avijja paccaya sankhara. Sankhara paccaya vijnanam. Vijnana paccaya nama rupam. Nama rupa paccaya salayatanam. Salayatana paccaya phasso. Phassa paccaya vedana. Vedana paccaya tanha, tanha paccaya upadana. Upadana paccaya bhava, bhava paccaya jati. Jati paccaya jaramarana. Soka parideva dukkha domana supayasa sambhavanti. Eva metasa kevalasa dukkha khandasa samudayo hoti. This is called anuloma. This is in the order of arising, not the order of cessation. Now, do you find number 11? I want you to put 11 instead of 12. So, jati paccaya should be 11. And then, on the other column, before jaramarana, please put 12. So there are 12 factors in this formula. So 11 jati paccaya, 12 jaramarana, like that. Now the word Paticchasamubbada, it is said in Visuddhimagga that Paticchasamubbada means causes or conditions. Because there is another word, paticca samuppanna, which means those that arise dependent upon conditions. So paticca-samubbada is always made to mean the causes or the conditions. And some translate it as co-arising also. Now, co-arising itself, by itself, is not wrong, but it may lead to a misunderstanding. The meaning co-arising is explained in the commentaries on Visuddhimagga and the commentary on Vibhanga. But there, co-arising means conditions arising together or the effects arising together. So it is not that cause and effect arise together, not necessarily cause and effect arise together. So co-arising means causes arising together, effects arising together. Now that we must understand. Sometimes conditions and those that are conditioned may arise together. At other times, they may not arise together. So, in some links, the conditioning paccaya and the conditioned, say, paccayopana, they arise together. So in that case, we can say co-arising, to mean the the arising together of both cause and effect, or both conditioning and conditioned. But, say, sankharapatya vijnanam, in that link, it is not arising together. They arise at different times. So co-arising means causes arising together or effects arising together. Now, with regard to the teaching of the cause and effect, Buddhism does not accept that there is no cause for anything to arise. This Buddhism does not accept. And it does not accept also the saying the cause is the creation of God or creation of Brahma. This also Buddhism does not accept. What it accepts is, yes, things are conditioned by some other things, and that condition is not the creation or not the Brahma, but these their respective conditions or causes according to natural laws. So in paticca-samubbada, this natural relationship between cause and effect will be explained. And in Buddhism, or let's say Buddhism teaches that conditions arise not singly, not alone. There are many conditions and there are many, let's say, effects. So there is not just one condition or one cause. There are many causes and many effects. So that is what is accepted in Buddhism. So there are four modes of cause and effect. One cause, one effect. One cause, many effects. Many causes, one effect. Many causes, many effects. Buddhism accepts only the fourth. The other three, it doesn't accept. So we must understand this also. But here in this formula, only one cause is given, avijja paccaya sankhara, right? But that is because they are the chief among the causes. They are prominent among the causes, and so they are singled out. But we must not understand that avijja is the only condition for sankharas, and sankharas are the only condition for vijnana and so on. Sometimes, because it is a chief cause, Buddha mentioned this. Sometimes it is prominent, and so it mentioned this. Okay, now avijja paccaya sankhara. Avijja means ignorance, And you know what ignorance means. It is moha, right? Oh, the translation of the sentences. Avijja paccaya sankhara. Because there is ignorance as condition, karma formations arise. Now, this is the literal translation. The translation made by most authors is dependent on ignorance, arise, karmic formations, and so on in the manual. But avijja paccaya means avijja as paccaya, as condition. And paccaya means because of the R at the end of that word means because of. So avijja paccaya means because of avijja as condition. Sankhara, and then we connect it with the word sambhavanti at the end. Sankhara, sambhavanti. Sankharas arise. So, because there is ignorance as condition, karma formations arise. Because there are karma formations as condition, consciousness arises and so on. Okay, avijja means moha. So, moha concomitant with 12 akusala cetas. And this is not strange for you. To you. You already know that. But sankharas are explained to have of three kinds. Not only three kinds, but I pick up only three kinds, because the others may be confusing. So there are three sankharas, let us say. The first is the formations of merit. The second, formation of demerit. And the third, formations of imperturbable. Formations of merit. Now, sankhara here means karma or chetana. So, formations of merit means chetana concomitant with kusala. But since the third one is to be imperturbable, that means to be arupa, we take here formations of merit to mean only kama vajra kusala and rupa vajra kusala. So, formations of merit means chetana concomitant with 8 kama vajra kusala chetas and 5 rupa vajra kusala chetas. So they are called formations of merit. And formations of demerit, that's easy. Chetana concomitant with 12 akusala chetas. And formations of imperturbable means chetana concomitant with 4 arupa vajra kusala chetas. I don't know why they are separated as one formation, the arupa vajras are, because kama vajra and rupa vajra are put together as one kind of formation of merit, and the last is also formation of merit, but it is called formations of imperturbable. So because of avijja, ignorance, we acquire merit, or we acquire kusala or akusala, or we get jhanas because of avijja. Because we do not really see the true nature of things, we do merit, or sometimes we do akusala, demerit, or we acquire arupa vajra kusalas. Now, avijja is explained in the manual as ignorance is the cittisika delusion, right? Moha, which obscures perception of the true nature of things. So because of avijja, we are unable to see the true nature of things, just as a cataract obscures perception of visible objects. According to the Sotanta method of explanation, ignorance is non-knowledge, not understanding of the Four Noble Truths. According to the Abhidhamma method, ignorance is non-knowledge of 8 things, Four Noble Truths, and then prenatal past, that means past aggregates, past existences. The post-mortem future, that means aggregates in the future lives. And the past and the future together, the aggregates of both the past and future. And then this one, dependent arising or dependent origination. So according to Abhidhamma method, ignorance or moha is not understanding of these eight things. According to Sutta method, avijja is not understanding the Four Noble Truths. So Abhidhamma method is wider than the Sutta method here. And sankharas, now I already explained to you the sankhara. So because of this avijja, because we have this avijja as a latent tendency in our minds, we do merit, sometimes we do demerit, sometimes we practice samatha meditation and we may get arupa vachara jhanas. So, okay, now, ignorance is a chief cause. That is why ignorance alone is mentioned here. Okay, the second one, sankhara paccaya vijnana. Because there are karma formations as condition, resultant consciousness arises. Although there is the word vijnana, which can mean all chetas, here it means only the resultant, vipaka chetas, not all chetas. And vipaka chetas means both at patisanti and in life, not just patisanti. So vijnana here means resultant consciousness of vipaka chetas and not just patisanti chetas. And here vijnana means 32 mundane resultant chetas, 32 lokiya vipaka chetas. They are conditioned by chetana or sankhara. Now here sankhara means karma. So they are the results of karma. And 32 lokiya vipaka chetas, mundane resultant consciousness. So which sankharas cause which vijnana? You can find out from the fifth chapter on karma. As a result of, say, formation of demerit, what are the result? What are the vijnanas? Seven akusala vipaka chetas, right? Something like that. So, if you are familiar with the section on karma in the fifth chapter, you can explain here in detail. Now, next one, vijnana paccaya nama rupam. Because there is consciousness as condition, nama rupa and nama rupa arise. Now, it is strange here. The word nama rupa does not mean just nama and rupa. But sometimes nama, sometimes rupa, sometimes nama and rupa. And here vijnana means 32 resultant chetas, the same as vijnana in number 2. But it also means karma formation consciousness. Karma formation consciousness means consciousness concomitant with mundane kusala and akusala. Is it chetas? Consciousness concomitant with chetas. So, please change to chetana. So, consciousness concomitant with mundane kusala and akusala chetana. Not chetas. So, vijnana can mean just vipaka vijnana, or here, karma formation, in Pali it is called abhisankhara, karma formation consciousness. So consciousness concomitant with kusala and akusala chetana. Or sometimes it is all chetas. And nama here means 52 chetasikas. Because vijnana means consciousness, and so nama here does not mean consciousness. So it means 52 chetasikas, and rupa means all 28 material properties. Now, why do we say nama rupa and nama rupa. Sometimes vijnana conditions nama only. Sometimes it conditions rupa only. Sometimes it conditions both nama and rupa. Now, in arupa vajra realm, vijnana conditions nama only, right? That means, say, vijnana arises there. And along with vijnana, there are jetasikas. So, vijnana is the condition, and jetasikas are those that are conditioned. Here, vijnana pachaya nama, not nama rupa, right? Then, what about mindless beings? In that case, vijnana pachaya rupa. Now, vijnana means karma formation consciousness, one of the karma formation consciousness. Or to be exact, the fifth jhana consciousness. So in that case, vijnana pachaya rupa. But when it arises in five aggregate realms, like human realms, it conditions both nama and rupa. So the word nama rupa should be understood to mean sometimes nama, sometimes rupa, sometimes nama, both nama and rupa. So in this sentence, vijnana pachaya nama rupam, vijnana means 32 vibhaga chetas or kusala and akusala chetas or all consciousness, and nama means chetasikas and rupa means rupa. Nama rupa pachaya salayatana. Because there are nama, rupa, and nama, rupa as condition, the sixth base and sixfold base arise. Now here, nama, rupa means nama, rupa, and nama, rupa. And salayatana means sixth base and six bases. Sometimes sixth base, sometimes six bases. Here, nama means, again, 52 chetasikas, and rupa means four primaries, six base metas, that means eye base, ear base, and so on, and then jivita and ahara. If you don't understand all these, don't worry. And then six bases are the six internal bases. Eye base, now you know the 12 bases, right? Chakkhayatana, sotayatana, and so on, right? So here, six internal bases are taken. Eye base, ear base, nose base, tongue base, body base, and mind base. Now, with regard to mind base, now what is eye base? Eye sensitivity, right? Ear base, ear sensitivity, and so on. And what is mind base? How many chetas? Mind base means chetas, right? All chetas or just vibhaga chetas? Look at the book. Four. Dependent on mind and matter arise the six sense bases. Here, mind and matter has the same denotation in step three. Of the six bases, the first five bases are the sensitive matters of the eye, ear, nose, tongue, and body, while the mind base denotes the 32 kinds of resultant consciousness. Now, in the explanation of how different nama rupa and nama rupa are related to six bases or the sixth base, the Visuddhimagga includes non-vibhaga nama also. Both vibhaga nama and non-vibhaga nama. So according to that, manayatana, mind-based means both vibhaga mind, vibhaga chaita and non-vibhaga jetas. Why is there this difference? Because when we try to understand what these terms, nama, rupa, salayatana, and so on, stand for, we have to go back to the book Vibhanga. And there, they are explained in two ways, Sotanta method and Abhidhamma method. According to Sotanta method, only resultant consciousness are taken. But according to Abhidhamma method, both resultant and non-resultant are taken. So in some books you may find that say mind-based means all chetas. And in some books you may find mind-based means just 32 vibhaga chetas. Both are correct. The same with the salayatana, paccaya, passo, and so on. In order to understand this, you have to understand the five causes in the past, five effects in the present, and five causes in the present, and five effects in the future. And that will come later. So, vijnana, nama rupa, salayatana, passa, vedana. These belong to five effects in the present. Since they belong to the effect, they must be vibhaga chetas. That is why, according to Sotanta method, manayatana, mind-based, means just 32 resultant consciousnesses, and not all. But according to Abhidhamma method is all comprehensive, so it takes all. Okay, so because of nama and rupa, there are six sense bases. Then number five is salayatana paccaya passo. Because there are six base and sixfold bases as condition, contact arises. Now, here passa means eye contact, ear contact, nose, tongue, body, and mind contact. What is eye contact? That is passa concomitant with two chakku vijnana chetas. You see something and there is the chakku vijnana cheta. Right? So there is the object object which is seen, and there is the eye through which seeing arises, and there is seeing. When these three come together, what happens? What arises? Passa arises, right? So passa is not just coming together of these three, but something that comes out of the coming together of these three. Passa is a distinct ultimate reality. So passa is not just coming together of the three, but something that comes out of the coming together of the three. Like when I hit the desk, the sound is produced. So sound is not the coming together of my hand and the desk, but that which comes out of, or which is caused by, the coming together of my hand and the desk. So in the same way, passa is not just coming together of the three, but something that arises out of the coming together of the three. And that is called here contact. And if the contact arises along with the seeing consciousness, it is called eye contact. And if arises with hearing consciousness, then it is called ear contact, and so on. Then mind contact. What is mind contact here? Passa concomitant with mundane resultant chetas. That means how many mundane resultant chetas are there? 32. But you have to take the 10 out, right? So 32 minus 10, 22. So actually, Pasa concomitant with the remaining 22 mundane results, chetas, resultant chetas. If you want to specific, you may add the 22 there. And six bases are, here six bases are taken to mean both sets of six bases. The internal six bases and external six bases. Here, eye base, ear, nose, tongue, body, and mind base, right? They are internal. And then, visible database, sound, odor, flavor, tangible database, and dharma base. So they are external. External bases are taken here according to the opinion of some teachers. So there are two groups of teachers. One group said this Paticchasamubbada is for living beings only, and so we need not worry about external things. So according to them, only the first six are meant by Salayatana here. But the another group said it's okay, because there is a relationship as conditioning and conditioned between the outside things and the consciousness of the beings. So according to them, the external basis can also be taken. That is why here, six base, although the word means six bases, we have to understand two sets of six bases. So the internal bases, six internal bases and six external bases. So the pasa depends upon eye base, right? Actually, not only on eye base. It depends on eye base, eye consciousness, and visible data, right? Yeah. But eye base is the most prominent and the chief condition for it, and so here it's called eye contact. So in this way they are related. So when you do not have the eye sensitivity, you don't have eye consciousness, and so you don't have eye contact. If you do not have ear sensitivity, you don't have ear consciousness, and so no ear contact, and so on. So we can understand that pasa is conditioned by six bases. Pasapachiya vedana. Because there is contact as condition, feeling arises. So feeling here means feeling born of eye contact and so on. Feeling born of eye contact. That means you see something and there are three, the visible object, eye sensitivity, and seeing consciousness. So because of these three coming together, there is contact. When there is contact, there is the experience of the object, which is called vedana here. So in the manual, vedana is described as a particular affective tone. Contact is the encounter of consciousness with the object, and that encounter is necessarily accompanied by a particular affective tone, experiencing of the object. Pasa is just the contact. I mean, it's something that joins the mind and the object. And then when they come into contact through pasa, then chitta experiences the object, and that experience is called vedana. As you know, there can be how many kinds of vedana? Three or five kinds of vedana. But here, vedana is said to be of six kinds, that is, feeling born of eye contact, ear contact, nose, tongue, body contact, and mind contact. When there is no pasa, there can be no vedana. So we know that vedana is conditioned by contact. So feeling may be pleasant, painful, or neutral. Vedana paccaya tanha, because there is feeling as condition, craving arises. So vedana here means first resultant sukha vedana, because vedana and tanha, vedana belongs to the five effects in the present. So here resultant sukha vedana is taken, or all resultant sukha, dukkha, and ubhukha vedana can be taken. Or non-resultant vedana, that is added by the sub-commentary. So we can just leave it out. So vedana here means sukha vedana, or sukha, dukkha, and ubhukha vedana. And it conditions, or because of it, tanha, craving arises. So craving arises through sukha vedana, dukkha vedana, and ubhukha vedana. Although craving is distinguished by way of its object, the craving itself actually depends on the feeling that arises through contact with that object. So craving depends on the experience. First you experience the object and then you like it. You are attached to it. So the craving needs vedana as a condition. If one experiences a pleasant feeling, one relishes that pleasant feeling and desires the object only insofar as it arouses the pleasant feeling. So when you have a pleasant feeling, you like it. So there is tanha. When you have a painful feeling, you don't like it. But there is tanha. How? Read on. On the other hand, when one experiences a painful feeling, one has a craving to be free from the pain, and one longs for a pleasurable feeling to replace it. So when you have painful feeling, you want it to disappear, and you want a pleasurable feeling. So, tanha is conditioned by painful feeling also. And then what about neutral feeling? Neutral feeling has a peaceful nature, and this too becomes an object of craving. You can be attached to neutral feeling, because neutral feeling is like sukha vedana, a kind of sukha vedana, more subtle than sukha vedana, but still it is so good that you can be attached to it. So all these three kinds of feeling condition craving or tanha. Tanha is said to be of three kinds, right? What are the three kinds of tanhas? Kama tanha, bhava tanha, and vibhava tanha. They are explained well in 7th chapter. Right? Oh yes. You can go back to page 297. So they are explained in chapter 7, section 38, and they are explained here also. So there is kama tanha, bhava tanha, and vibhava tanha. Now kama tanha is craving for sense objects. Bhava tanha means craving concomitant with the eternalist view, or with the view that things are permanent. And vibhava tanha means craving concomitant with the view that things are annihilated after death, or at death. Now the first one, kama dana. Oh, wait a minute. First, we must understand the six dhanas explained in connection with paticca samubbada. That is rupa dhana, sadda dhana, gandha dhana, rasa dhana, potabha dhana, dhamma dhana. There are six kinds of objects, right? So, craving for visible objects is called rupa dhana. Craving for sound is called sadda dhana, and so on. So first, there are six kinds of dhanas. Each one of these six kinds of dhanas can be kama dhana or bhava dhana or vibhava dhana. Say you are attached to a visible object. If your attachment is by way of enjoying the sense object, it is kama dhana, kama rupa dhana, right? If your attachment is accompanied by the wrong view that you are permanent, that everything is permanent, then it is bhava rupa dhana. If your attachment is accompanied by the view that everything is annihilated at death and nothing more happens, then this is vibhava rupa dhana. So these six kinds of dhanas, each one of these six kinds of dhanas has these three varieties. So there are, if we multiply 6 by 3, we get how many? 18 kinds of dhanas. And each one of those 18 can be internal as well as external. So how many? 18 multiplied by 2, 36. And each one of these 36 can belong to present, past, future. So 36 multiplied by 3, 108. So this is what we call 108 kinds of dhanas. You may find this here and there in the books. So you need to understand you know how to calculate 108 kinds of cravings. You remember? First, there are six kinds of cravings. Craving for, say, sight, craving for sound, and so on, right? That is craving six kinds of objects. And then each one of them can be kama dhana, bhava dhana, or vibhava dhana. And each one of them can be internal or external. And each one of them can belong to past, present, or future. So 3 multiplied by 6 multiplied by 2 multiplied by 3. So we get 108 kinds of craving. Next one. Tanha pachaya upadana. Because there is craving as condition, clinging arises. You know there are four upadanas. If you don't remember, you go back to the 7th chapter. So, sense object clinging, false view clinging, right and ritual clinging, and self-illusion clinging, actually. Kama ubarana, deity ubarana, silabada ubarana, attawada ubarana. Among them, kama ubarana is loba. Deity ubarana, silabada ubarana, and attawada ubarana are deity. So in reality, there are only two, loba and deity. Yeah. Now, what is the difference between tanha and ubarana regarding regarding kama ubarana. Kama ubarana is loba. Tanha is also loba. Now, weak loba is tanha, and strong loba is ubarana. In the books, it is said that longing for an object that has not reached is tanha. That means before you get it, you want it, you are attached to it. That is tanha. Like the thieves stretching his hand in the dark to get something. Upadana is the attachment to the object which you have arrived at, which you have caught. It is like the thieves taking hold of the thing. So once he has taken hold of the thing, he will not let it go. So that is a strong attachment. So not so strong attachment is tanha, and strong attachment is upadana. So at the moment of tanha, you may be able to let it go. But when you reach the stage of upadana, you will not let it go. You have firmly grasped it. And tanha is the opposite of fewness of wants. And upadana is the opposite of contentment. You don't want many things. So that is the opposite of tanha. And you are not attached to anything. You are not clinging to anything. You do not grasp at anything. And that is like contentment. When you are content, you don't want anything more. Okay. So, loba as tanha and loba as upadana has this kind of difference. But in reality, tanha is loba and kama upadana is also loba. So, this strong grasping or strong attachment can arise only when there is a weak attachment or weak desire. So that is why tanha is said to be a condition for upadana. Upadana paccaya bhava. Because there is clinging as condition, becoming arises. Now, bhava. We must understand that there are two kinds of bhavas. The first is called kama bhava. Although it is bhava or becoming, it is not existence as we understand it. So here, bhava means something that causes some other thing to be. Kama bhava means chetana and covetousness or abhijja, etc., concomitant with it. So that is kama bhava. Upapadi bhava means resultant aggregates and rupa born of kama. So that means existence. Now, at the moment of bodhisandhi, you know, for human beings, at the moment of bodhisandhi, what arises? Bodhisandhi cheta, chetasikas, and rupa born of kama, right? So here, resultant aggregate means bodhisandhi cheta and chetasikas. Rupa born of kama means rupa born of kama. So that is upapadi bhava. So, in this link, upadana paccaya bhava Bhava means both Kama Bhava and Upapati Bhava. Now, when you have grasped at something, when you have clung to something, then you do something. So, the clinging to things leads to action. And that action is what is called Kama Bhava. Action means acting right or acting wrong. So, depending upon the clinging, sometimes you act right, sometimes you act wrong. So when you act wrong, then you get akusala kama bhava, and when you act right, you get kusala kama bhava. And as the result of this upadana through kama bhava, there is upapati bhava. Upapati bhava means rebirth, actually. Rebirth in the next existence. So rebirth in the next existence can also be said to be caused by or conditioned by upadana. So in the sentence upadana paccaya bhava, bhava means both kama bhava and upapati bhava. But in number 10, bhava paccaya jati, bhava means kama bhava only, and not upapati bhava, because upapati bhava and jati are the same. So A cannot be the condition for A, B cannot be the condition for B. So upapati bhava cannot be a condition for jati, which is the same as upapati bhava. So here, in the sentence bhava paccaya jati, bhava means only kama bhava. So because there is kama bhava, there is jati. So kama bhava and sankhara are the same, right? The word sankhara here means what? Formations of merit, formations of demerit, formations of imperturbable. And so that means kusala and akusala, kama. Here also, kama bhava means kusala and akusala kama. So, sankhara and kama bhava are the same. Then why mention twice? Yeah, they belong to different times. We'll come to that later. Okay. Jati paccaya jara maranang. One small, let's call sentence. And then, soka parideva dukkha domana sa upayasa sambhavanti. Because there is birth as condition, aging and death arise. Now, when there is birth, there is inevitably aging and death. So, when there is birth, you cannot avoid becoming old, and you cannot avoid death. So they are the inevitable result of birth. Because we had birth as a human being, one day, or not one day, every day, we are getting older and older, and one day we will die. So birth is the basis of getting old and dying. So birth is a condition for aging and death, which two are inevitable result of birth. But sorrow, lamentation, bodily pain, mental pain, and burning in the mind, which is translated as despair, burning in the mind, they may or they may not arise. So they are not inevitable result of birth. So they are incidental consequences of birth. That is why they are separated. Jati paccaya jara maranang. That is one small sentence. And then soka parideva dukkha domana supayasa sambhavanti. Like that. So in the English translation also, because there is birth, this condition, aging and death arise. And then sorrow, lamentation, bodily pain, mental pain, and burning in mind arise. Now, consider rebirth as Brahma? Will there be sorrow for the Brahmas? Will there be sorrow? Huh? Yes or no? And why? If you say yes or if you say no, I will ask why. Yes or no? You go back to the third chapter. Huh? Can Brahmas have dosa mula chaitas? No. So Brahmas have no sorrow, right? Will they cry? Lamentation? No. Bodily pain? No. Mental pain? Maybe. Right? Burning in the mind? Not likely. So these are the incidental consequences. They may or they may not arise. That is why they are put separately from jara and marana. But jara marana, they are inevitable. So long as there is jadi, you are going to get jara and marana. You cannot run away from these two. But if you are reborn as a Brahma, even if you are reborn as an Arupa Brahma, then you do not get all these things. So these are the incidental consequences. And the manual will say it later on also. Eva metasa kevalasa dukkha kandasa samudayo hodi. Thus, there is the arising of this whole mess of suffering. So according to the Buddha, what we think to be happiness is included in this whole mess of suffering. Why? Why do we say that happiness is suffering? Because happiness has a beginning and an end. So happiness is oppressed by arising and disappearing. So it falls under the head of dukkha. So it is called suffering. So we must understand suffering, we must understand to that extent. So everything in the world is actually suffering, because everything in the world has a beginning and the end. Now this is what we call the anuloma formula, or in the order of arising. And only this formula is given here in this manual. Now, there is another formula which is called patiloma, that is reverse order. But here reverse does not mean going backward. It means reverse of arising. So it is cessation. Now, the truth of being, rebirth, linking, and the structure of conditions are four things very hard to see and likewise difficult to teach. It is stated in Visuddhimagga and also in the commentary to Vibhanga. Now, the truth means the Four Noble Truths are difficult to see and they are also difficult to teach. And about a being is difficult to understand and difficult to teach. And then rebirth linking, patisandhi, is difficult to understand and also difficult to teach. And this structure of conditions means this patichasamubbada is also difficult to understand, difficult to see or difficult to understand, and also difficult to teach. So there are four things that are both difficult to understand and difficult to teach. And they are the Four Noble Truths about a being, rebirth, and patichasamubbada. Whoever learns alertly this discourse will go from excellence to excellence. And when perfected, he will then escape beyond the vision of the king of death. So, it is just encouragement for first learning the structure of conditions or paticca-samuppada. So now we come to the end of the formula. And then next week, we'll study some other aspects of this formula. Okay.